Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, first to the Middle East this morning. The funeral is taking place of Ismail Haniyeh, the Hamas leader killed in the early hours of Wednesday morning by a presumed Israeli airstrike on the Iranian capital. The killing of Haniyeh, who had been leading ceasefire negotiations for Hamas, came just hours after a confirmed Israeli strike against a senior figure in Hezbollah, the Lebanese-based militant group. Shortly before coming on air, I spoke to defence editor at The Economist, Shashank Joshi. I started by asking him what the current events will mean for ceasefire negotiations.
This could go both ways. Haniyeh, as you say, was intimately involved in the negotiation of the ceasefire, and his killing probably derails the talks in the immediate short term. On the other hand, we also know that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was very sceptical of the idea of a permanent ceasefire. He was resisting this. Of course, he has some political advantage in ensuring that the war doesn't come to a swift end, because that prolongs his political career as well, given his domestic troubles. And what he can now say is that I have killed a top Hamas military leader in Gaza. This is Mohammed Deif. I have killed Ismail Haniyeh, the top political leader, and I've done it in Iran, in the heart of our enemy's capital city. And that can, in a paradoxical way, perhaps set the stage for him to say, I'm winning over Hamas, and I can now accept a ceasefire from a position of strength. So I wouldn't, in other words, just assume this is the end of the political process.
You think this is preparation potentially for an off-ramp for...
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say preparation, because that implies a very clever and conscious strategy on the part of the Israelis. I think what may have happened here is that they saw an opportunity to take Haniyeh out. They couldn't have done that where he normally lives, because he normally lives in Qatar, the capital of Qatar, Doha, which is, of course, allied to Western countries. It's an important Arab state. And if you had assassinated a Hamas leader there, there would have been an absolute uproar among Israel's Arab partners and its Western allies. So they may have simply seen an opportunity here.
And that opportunity was for an attack of Ismail Haniyeh on Iranian soil. Given that, and given that there were clearly security breaches of some sort for this to happen, what are Iran's options as it weighs up now how to respond?
Well, first of all, this has to be seen in the long pattern of Israeli penetration of Iran. In the last 15 years, we've seen extraordinary feats of intelligence by Israel in Iran. They've located and killed Iranian nuclear scientists, including the top scientist. They have managed to kill Al-Qaeda figures in Tehran. They, in fact, even stole the entire Iranian nuclear archive of nuclear weapons-related work from a warehouse in Tehran in 2018, right under the eyes of the Iranians. So this is yet more evidence that Iran has a serious, serious security problem, I think, and that's been underscored to the new president on day one of his job. But I think more broadly, they now have to respond. The information available at the moment suggests that the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, has ordered a response. And I think the question is, will it be something akin to what we saw on April 13th, which was that, if you recall, that extraordinary barrage of 300 plus missiles towards Israel, the first ever direct, overt Iranian attack on Israel in that way? Or will it be something more subtle, more low-key, perhaps a missile attack from proxies in Yemen like the Houthis, or militia in Iraq and Syria? And I think my sense is we will see a sizable attack, but one that may not be quite as direct and dramatic as the April attack.
Is part of the calculation here by Benjamin Netanyahu, as he's led out assassinations of Hamas, Hezbollah leaders, that calculation that you're talking about there of the security issues, the security problems in Iran, that just Iran is less prepared for war and therefore potentially less prepared and able to respond?
It may be the calculation, because if you, but it would be a very much a gamble. If you recall back in April 1st, Israel struck a consular annex, an Iranian consular facility in Damascus, and killed an Iranian Revolutionary Guards official. And at the time, Israeli intelligence did not anticipate that the Iranian response would be so fierce. They got it wrong. It was an intelligence failure. And they were shocked when the scope of the Iranian attack became clear on April 13th, even though, as you know, it was parried by a big effort helped along by the Americans, the British, the Jordanians, and the French, along with others. So it could be that they feel Iran is weak, they can push Iran, but I think they must also be remembering they got it wrong in April, they could be getting it wrong again. But clearly, the Israelis are in a very risk-tolerant mood. They're not overly worried about what the Americans are telling them. They're not worried about jeopardizing the ceasefire talks. They feel in a very, very aggressive and risk-taking mood at this stage.
Whether it's gambles, as you call it there, potentially, or calculations by Benjamin Netanyahu, how is he being perceived in his own country, given events of recent days?
Well, he's immensely unpopular, and the events don't make an awful lot of difference to that. Of course, in the last week, we have seen almost unprecedented political violence in Israel, where soldiers who were told to detain other soldiers who had committed alleged abuses against Palestinian detainees and tortured them. In the ones who were trying to undertake the arrest were pepper sprayed, were attacked, and then far-right thugs allied to ministers in the Israeli government tried to storm a military base where the detained soldiers were being held. So we're seeing real political unrest in Israel at this time. Netanyahu is very, very unpopular, but it's really important we don't confuse that with hostility to all of his foreign policy. There is a consensus among the serious sort of foreign policy security elite in Israel that, yes, you need a ceasefire in Gaza, but ultimately you cannot allow Hezbollah to go unpunished when it commits attacks like those which killed teenagers in the Golan Heights a few days ago. And importantly, there is probably also a consensus that it is right and legitimate to go after senior Hamas leaders wherever they are, even if the timing of this attack, given the ceasefire talks, was less than ideal.
So on Gaza and Golan Heights that you mentioned there, and that attack last Saturday on a soccer pitch killing young children, we've seen since then the attack in Beirut. We today have the funeral of the Hezbollah commander Shoukry taking place. What happens there next? Is there a role to be played by US peacekeeping forces? Is there any sense that US interventions when it comes to a ceasefire in Gaza is progressing, that there are back channels reopening and getting momentum again?
That was the case progress in ceasefire talks prior to this strike on Hania. It really is now difficult to see how Hamas can go back to the table. It's possible they feel under such intense military pressure, and now having been thrown into turmoil by losing their political leader, that they feel, oh, we really need a ceasefire now. But politically, it is very hard for them to sit down and make a deal with the Israelis. So that's probably been delayed. On the Golan front, I think it's a little bit of a different dynamic. Israel has responded to that killing of teenagers in the Golan, the Druze minority group. It has responded with a pretty punchy strike in Beirut, killing a senior Hezbollah leader. And now Hezbollah will respond. And my feeling is it will respond in a slightly calibrated, cautious fashion. It won't try to escalate things further. But the problem is that the longer this war goes on, the more that there is a risk of repeated incidents like the one we saw on the Golan Heights. And there are some in Israel who think it's better to launch a war against Hezbollah now and try to seriously destroy or weaken the group than wait 2 or 3 years, by which time they will have grown their rocket arsenal further and indeed acquired more precision-guided missiles. So I think the longer this drags on, the bigger the risk that through a series of accidents or through an Israeli policy choice, we end up with a really catastrophically large war in Lebanon that would dwarf the one we saw in 2006.
The US Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, again last night urging all parties in the Middle East to stop what he called escalatory actions and achieve a ceasefire. And he went on warning the Middle East was on a path toward more conflict, more violence, more suffering, more insecurity. And he said it's crucial that we break this cycle. Do you think there's the potential, given war in Gaza, this could drag all the way to November? We're 90 odd days out from an election, and that there is just potentially no end in sight until the next US president is elected, and there may be a change of appetite, more energy, more acceleration around ceasefire talks?
It's entirely possible, entirely possible. And I think that when Blinken talks about breaking the cycle, what he means is that the road to stabilizing all of this runs through Gaza. If you get a ceasefire in Gaza, Hezbollah stops firing, you know, there's sort of less risk of massive civilian casualties in Gaza that cause outrage. And it buys you time to talk about the bigger issues. But here's the problem. The problem is that in previous wars in Gaza, it is how it's ended, with a ceasefire, with Israel effectively saying, we have punished Hamas and we can now wait till the next round. October 7th, the massacre of October 7th, its sheer magnitude and its horror and sadism, it changed Israeli views. And the view is that now we can't just coexist alongside Hamas. We have to make sure they never again rule Gaza. They can never threaten us again. And we need to destroy the group. And that's why you see assassinations like that against Haniyeh. It's not just punishment for October 7th. It's an effort, I think, to really destroy the group and break it down in a way that's just not been done before. And so that runs at odds with the principle and logic of a ceasefire. So all in all, yes, I think this is going to run to the US elections, and I'm afraid to say most likely probably beyond those as well.
Finally and briefly, given those US elections, what differentials do you think are at play if it is a Donald Trump or a Kamala Harris presidency that emerges from November when it comes to the timing, the approach of a ceasefire being potentially agreed?
Well, Harris, of course, has taken a slightly more Israel skeptic line than Joe Biden, although it's important not to exaggerate that difference, I think. But there's certainly signs she's been willing to encouraging of a tough approach towards Israel. So the Israelis will be very cognizant of that. And indeed, we saw some really strikingly contemptuous commentary by Israeli officials towards Kamala Harris during Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to Washington a week ago. So they'll be cognizant of that. That will affect the ceasefire. It will also affect other things, for example, how the United States treats the issue of settler violence in the West Bank. Donald Trump, well, as with everything else, you know, who knows? But I think it's safe to say there will be some in Israel who hope he will give them a much, much more generous approach and give them the latitude to do what they want with regard to Iran and Hezbollah.
OK, well, thank you for all of that. Defence editor with The Economist, Shashank Joshi.
Thanks very much.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.